This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by 3010weightlossforlife.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
In the next few moments, we will have some updated results in the race for Washington's 3rd congressional district. Yesterday, as we said, Joe Kent took the lead. We knew this was coming, and it would appear that he will not only be the next Republican to head to the primary, defeating the incumbent, Jamie Herrera Butler, but he almost certainly will be a congressperson. This is a very red district that is not in dispute. Whoever the Republican is, including if it was Jamie Herrera Butler, would end up going to win that race. So this is good news from the perspective of not wanting to lose any Republican seats, especially when we come from a state like Washington, where we can't, beggars can't be choosers, frankly. I get why people don't like Jamie Herrera Butler, and I'll be honest, I don't particularly like her either. I like Dan Newhouse. I think Dan Newhouse is very much a strong conservative. I disagree with his horrible vote to impeach the president. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. But that is not how I would decide who I'm going to vote for. Jamie Herrera Butler, beyond supporting the impeachment, has been, in my view, kind of a wishy-washy Republican. I don't know if I would call her a moderate Republican per se, but I don't think she's a conservative. Certainly not the one that you would expect to represent not just Vancouver, which is a little bit mixed, I guess, from an ideological perspective, but Battleground? Don't tell me a city named Battleground needs a Democrat representing it. You need someone who's hardcore to the right. It's called Battleground. Very peaceful place, by the way. Fair point. Kelso, Longview? You think, seriously, you think there are a lot of liberals in Kelso and Longview? No. Not there. So it would seem that Joe Kent is going to move on. We'll get those numbers as they come in from the state. But as he told our sister station and the Dory Monson show, a big part of this win is because of President Trump.
I think President Trump's endorsement's the most significant endorsement in the history of American politics. So it really helped. Yeah, you can definitely tell the media's in meltdown that, you know, a Trump-endorsed candidate is taking out one of the impeachment voters.
That is the big takeaway here. Now, if Joe Kent had lost, and by the way, there's still a possibility he could lose. I don't think so. I think all the signs point to him winning. The people who vote at the last minute in Washington state, not Seattle, but in Washington, are Republicans. And especially in this district, because of the issues concerning voter integrity or election integrity and the concerns, they didn't want to vote via mail. Fine, I get it. I disagree with that. I think that's silly, but I get it. Which means all the numbers that are coming in right now, the remaining ballots are about 9,000, 10,000 left. They've already been trending hard in the direction of Joe Kent. They'll almost certainly continue to. So I expect him to win. The takeaway here is not necessarily Trump-backed candidates versus anyone else. It's not even necessarily about the impeachment vote. Although maybe in this case it's more playing a role than in other places. So we'll end up seeing, he understands, though, that the media is pushing against him. They don't want to see him win.
The establishment and the corporate press, they don't want America First to be the future of the Republican Party, but it is the future of the Republican Party.
And the funny thing is, he says America First, which makes a lot more sense than some people say, like the MAGA agenda or the Trump agenda. America First, we are designed, programmed to think instinctively that that's wrong, that it's selfish, right? Because even as I say America First, something sounds off about it slightly, because we are not supposed to be selfish in this country. This is not selfish. This is not selfish. We are supposed to think about this country before any other country. Our existence, our strength, is more important than any other country's existence and strength. It doesn't mean we're not good allies. We should absolutely be good allies. Whether we're talking about Israel or the UK, whatever it is, we need to be good allies, but not at the expense of our own survival and what's best for this country. But I love how some folks in the media want to pretend that America First is a white nationalist movement. His ultimate Democrat challenger, Marie Perez, she called him out as a white nationalist or a white supremacist. I kind of feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, in a world with diversity, equity, and inclusion, and all those efforts to diversify different organizations, I feel like the white nationalist movement would not come on a show hosted by a gay Jew so often. He's come on with an Asian producer? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very white nationalist.
That would be, well, you're going to lose your membership, buddy. But of course, that's all that people like Marie Perez and other Democrats have at their disposal. Let's just call the other side racist. Let's call them Nazis. Let's do what we can to bully them into not holding the positions that they hold that ultimately are best for this country. So we'll see what happens. But again, we had Dave Wasserman over at the, Cook Report, whatever that stupid thing is. He says, I've seen enough. I've had it. Joe Kent is moving on. Is he on the show tomorrow? I think he is.
Seems like it.
Yeah, so he'll be on tomorrow for his first interview, celebrating the win officially. That's how we'll phrase it. Unless, of course, he loses in this next dump of votes, which I don't expect. But if that happens, I imagine he'll cancel.
Can we get a little more confidence in how you say that next time? Maybe when he's on, you sound a little iffy there.
I'm glad Joe Kent is winning. Okay. And I'm glad he's going to be the congressman. Are.
I just want you to make sure that everyone else knows.
But then I don't want Heidi to think that I'm like two-timing her. I like Heidi too. Actually, really, this is another one of those races where not quite as difficult as Washington's 8th congressional district would have been voting. I love Matt Larkin. Love him. I think he is smart. I think he is also exceptionally nice, which you generally don't get from a politician. Like genuine niceness. I think the exact same thing of Jesse Jensen and Reagan Dunn. And the truth is, between the three candidates, not a whole lot of differences. I would argue, and I said this multiple times, and I've said off air to you, Matt Larkin is clearly the most conservative. Like on the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most conservative, he's clearly a 10. Jensen is very close to that, but I didn't view him as a 10, which also sounds weird out of context.
Yeah,
and Reagan is probably an 8 because of abortion, but Matt's a 10. He's a 10 in my book. And we're going to make sure that he gets elected. This one would have been tough, too. I probably would have voted for Joe over Heidi. I like them both. But in that case, I would say who has a better shot at winning and advancing. And I felt like it was Joe. And we have this kind of Tucker Carlson connection now. I mean, not as I'm way more exposed on Tucker than he is, but still.
But you guys have that in common, you know? You guys can talk about that. Hey, we've been in the same studio.
I called him my Tucker Carlson buddy once.
Okay, how'd that go?
I don't think he acknowledged it. He's been on the show with me. Or not on the same segment, but on the same episode. I think. Yeah, he's been on the same episode as me a couple times, actually. It would have been last night if this stupid Trump story didn't break.
Oh, yeah.
Then I ended up getting bumped to Thursday.
So stupid.
Ugh. Okay, push the button. Oh, no, let's go to traffic. I didn't look at the clock. I was distracted by our new board. We have a new board.
Yes.
Weirdly, it's better than the last one, but it looks older.
You think this looks older?
It's because the colors are so dark. It kind of looks almost analog. It's not, obviously. It's digital, but you don't think it looks older than the last one?
No, because all the LED lights are...
But what does this button do? I'm wondering...
That one turns off your microphone.
Oh. What about this?
Same thing, turns off your microphone. Different button for that.
Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. You can see me bloviate all day and yell at people. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Everything is racist.
Everything is racist. Especially when you call 911 on someone who happens to be black. In this case, a man looked like he was breaking into a home. A neighbor reports it to 911. But now we're supposed to pretend that this is another example of racial profiling. And it's courtesy of Deborah Horn from Cairo 7 TV, who I don't know about you. She is my favorite. Of all the reporters locally, it's probably between Deborah Horn and Steve Kiggins.
You have a little sarcasm, I think.
No, there's no sarcasm whatsoever. I think they do quality work. I especially like when they shoehorn themselves into every single story, taking away time to actually provide details that are pertinent to the story, but instead we get to hear you talk. That might sound sarcastic. That's just my natural tone.
Oh, I got it now.
Right? Okay. In fairness, I naturally sound snarky. I don't intend it to be. I think that this was a terrific story, and I am a more informed person having learned about this horrific example of racial profiling.
I had no sense of security anymore. She just took my comfort, you know.
Oh, the neighbor took his comfort. Whew. That dude, his name is Dason Barnes. Sounds like Jason, but only dumber. He happens to be black. He gets into his home that no one realized he had purchased. Why? Because he had moved in 3 weeks earlier. A neighbor did not know that. All the neighbor saw, which mysteriously is not part of this story, at least in the TV version, but in the print version, they don't include the fact that he was dressed in all black with a hood over his head. He was going in through the back of the house. A woman who knew the previous owners as recently as 3 weeks ago sees this happening. She confronts the guy, says, "This is not your home. I'm calling 911. He's all like, "It is my home." She goes, "No, it isn't. Show me your lease," which is an odd thing to ask for because no one holds their
lease. Yeah, I just have mine on me at all times.
Couldn't find my lease, but still. She calls 911. He records it along with his boyfriend, who's white. I'm pointing that out for a reason. You'll find out soon. Posts it online, then it goes nuts and viral, and he pretends that he's the victim of a hate crime.
You did not expect this, presumably, in Seattle.
Washington. We expect.
Oh, thank you so much. By the way, Deborah, White Center isn't Seattle. Just throwing that out there, because that appears to be a meme for people in White Center. Constantly saying, "We're not Seattle." I mean, you're considerably worse than Seattle, and that's saying something. I'm not kidding. It's almost, it's West Seattle, I think people say, for White Center, right?
Yeah, but they don't even want to claim West Seattle. They want White Center.
Yeah, and by the way, you should. I wouldn't want to claim Seattle even if I was worse.
You did not expect this, presumably, in Seattle.
We expected
here's the boyfriend.
To be subtler, you know.
Hold on, white dude. You expected it to be more subtle? White guy? You did? Were you there, by the way? Because I couldn't tell. Because the video of the encounter starts after the initial confrontation, at least from what I can tell. Were you there the whole time and you're telling me that this is racial profiling? You're the whitest white dude I have ever seen. You are in desperate need of a tan, my friend. That's a white dude. But he expected the racial profiling personally to be just a little more subtle. As if this was her saying, "You're a black person. You don't belong in this home. You can't afford homes." What is it? This is absurd, right? I'm not nuts here.
Worst audio I've ever had to pull.
Stairs. Can I touch your hair? Microaggression.
No one has ever said they want to touch your hair, dude. I would understand if Dason sounds like Jason but dumber if he said that. That dude didn't say that. It's the white guy who said that. As if he's somehow a victim.
As they call them, you know. And we can brush that off really easily. Because they're not dangerous. You know, this was a dangerous situation.
It was very dangerous. Yeah.
How was it dangerous, real quick? Was there any force used at all? No? Oh, sheriff's deputies responded and they were like, "Oh, yeah, no, he owns the home. We're going to leave." Tell me if this is reasonable to assume.
Okay.
You know a family lived in that home 3 weeks ago. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I'm there.
You went out of town, maybe. You haven't seen them in a couple weeks, 3 weeks. You pass by and you see anyone in a hoodie through the back door of the home try to get in. Would you not wonder if this was a break-in in a city that has experienced a pretty high number of home break-ins and crime in general? Is it not reasonable to at least wonder if this is a break-in?
Yeah, no, I think the concern meter, then, you know, it jumps a little bit, yes.
Just a tiny bit. And yet we immediately say that this is racial profiling. Just immediately. Without question. Of course. And Deborah Horn is out there saying, "Did you expect to be racially profiled in Seattle, even though we're in White Center? You wouldn't expect that, would you?" It's called the leading question, and it's you taking a position. She was taking a position there. This is not an example of racial profiling. Sorry. I know that hurts people Yes, I know I'm saying it hurts people to not be the victim of racial profiling, because these are people who are desperate to be victims so they can go on TV and talk about how I hope people really learn lessons. I hope everyone understands what actually happened here. Although, in fairness, I don't think that actually occurs in this video.
So now what do you want to do?
It makes me want to step out and enlighten the world on these certain situations and be able to bring light that these things are actually happening and they happen everywhere.
Okay, yeah. Got it. The poor woman, she acknowledges that she made a mistake, including with the 911 operator.
That's when I said to the 911 operator, I said, you know, looks like there's been a misunderstanding.
Now she's the victim because after this stupid video went viral, everyone's all like, she's a white supremacist.
My whole world has been flipped upside down. I've had to block out all of my platforms and apologize to all of my sponsors. And I'm receiving death threats.
Is that the right response to a story like this? Why are we just assuming that anyone who makes a false claim is telling the truth? Why do we allow that to happen? Why do we give crazy people the benefit of the doubt? And yeah, I'm calling them crazy. Sorry, white dude who's pretending you've been the victim of racial profiling. Oh, because you're dating, you feel his pain. Shut up. Just stop. Everyone wants to be a victim or a hero, sometimes at the same time. It allows them to gain sympathy. It allows them to have a story to tell. I am a member of a marginalized community. Please give me your pity. I don't want any of your pity. I'm a member of two marginalized communities. Do I ever bring up the fact that I'm victimized as a result of that? No. Have I actually experienced homophobia or anti-Semitism? Yeah, absolutely. Usually from people on the left, by the way. But I don't go around having an identity as a victim. People like this do. And people in Seattle eat this up. Oh, they love it, especially the other white people, usually white women with BLM lawn signs on their perfectly manicured lawns. Oh, they love it. And I'm sure they posted this video from Cairo 7 TV saying enough is enough. Not in my neighborhood. Push the button.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Matt Calkins over at the Times, the only person worth reading, and I don't even like sports, over at the Seattle Times, he had a story up today, a column. And he noticed that as Sue Bird, the athlete we're pretending is important and a big cultural figure, but she really isn't, but we're supposed to pretend otherwise because this is Seattle, she retired. She's done. She played her last game here in Seattle.
Last home regular season.
And that's what I just said.
Oh, you skipped over that part.
No, I said the last game at home.
No, you said she played her last regular season game.
Okay, fine.
They're making playoffs. She's done playing playoffs.
My point is, they celebrated her achievements.
Yes.
What they are, I don't know.
Lots.
Not really in the context of this league. Well, wow, I'm good. I'm good in this league and I can't play. They played a video tribute. And all different athletes said, oh, you mean so much, pretending. You mean so much to me, Sue. Blah, 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 blah. Best of luck, blah, blah, blah. One of them was Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was booed by the people in the crowd. He was booed. And Matt Calkins is wondering if this is just a sign of what's to come for the first Seahawks regular season game, in which is against the Denver Broncos, for which he is the starting quarterback and almost certainly will win because we don't really have a starting quarterback. We don't. I hope he loses. Will he be booed when he gets here?
I think so.
I don't know the answer. I don't know how vindictive this particular crowd is. And I don't know if it's fair to look at a storm crowd as a harbinger of things to come. It might be, but I don't think it's because of what we experienced or what Matt Calkins saw at the Storm game. People who go to Storm games, most of them, they don't go because they like the sport or they like the team. That's not why they go. They go because they like what they think it says about them. I support women's sports, so I'm going to go watch the Storm. They are the equivalent of the folks who on Blue Friday will wear all the Seahawks gear, but during the game they'll go food shopping because there are less people
there. Why don't you think
that
there's actual like Storm
fans? There's some fans, but the majority of them show up just to say they support women's sports. That's the only reason. They would be doing that with the soccer team, but they moved to Tacoma. I know they're coming back, but they moved to Tacoma.
No, they're playing up here this season.
Yeah, but when they moved to Tacoma, they didn't care that much. But now that they're back, they'll still try to go or pretend to go. Especially Sounders fans when they do the double headers. Like, let's show up early and show our support for the ladies. There's that player that one time who kicked that goal that one time. What's her name? The chick with the purple hair.
I agree with so many of your takes, but women's sports, I always feel like you are so wrong on the grand landscape.
I'm
of
not
Seattle
wrong. You have to separate out something. I am not commenting on whether or not the play is good.
No, I know. I'm not.
Push that aside. The people who show up are doing it so that they can say on their Twitter feed that they are a Storm fan and I've got season tickets. They don't pay. This is the person who watches the Super Bowl for the commercials. That's who we're talking about here. They're not actual fans. 1-800-465-8770.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. Online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on you and the communities you live in. And we start in Tukwila, a city that is known for two things: crime and big box stores. There's a lot of one and fewer of the other. I'll give you 1 second to figure out what that is exactly. Another big box retailer is ditching the city. This time it's DSW Shoes, where people convince themselves that they're buying designer shoes when they most certainly are not. Also, DSW Shoes makes no sense because I'm pretty sure that means designer shoe warehouse. So it's designer shoe warehouse shoes. That's a little redundant, but I guess you know exactly what they sell.
Yeah, I mean, they're just hammering home the point.
Okay. The store is closing on South Center Parkway. The last day is August 20th, which is 3 days after the last day of something else that we'll talk about maybe tomorrow. So you better get those ugly shoes quickly.
It really shows that the ambiance is not there, and then it shows that, you know, maybe the security isn't as good anymore.
That's a random shopper talking to Como TV, and she, like so many others, can't help but look at a story like this, a decision like this, a move like this, without viewing it through the lens of public safety. We've been having a lot of high-profile stories in the city we don't like to talk about in this segment, but also in Everett, where crime has led to closing down Starbucks. And a lot of small businesses have been suffering. They've been closing down. They've been moving, some of them. They've been struggling for sure because of the crime issues. But it's not just about public safety. It's also about the vibrancy of a community that goes away when you have a whole bunch of stores that are empty.
I worry about what will happen with empty buildings and empty storefronts.
No one wants to live or visit neighborhoods like that. Now, just to give you a sense of the crime situation specifically at the shopping area, last month there were 4 stolen cars, 4 reports of theft, and 4 commercial burglaries. Just last month. And the impact that crime is having on businesses is not just affecting those in Tukwila. You've got Burien experiencing the same exact issues.
Every event, every festival we've talked to across the board is 30% down.
30% down. How do we bring people in? How do we tell people, hey, come to Burien? You tackle the crime situation. That's Deborah George. She's the executive director of Discover Burien, also talking with Coma.
We're hitting it head on here with our police working more overtime and overnight and really trying to stay ahead of it. And I think that's what communities have to do.
That's an unfortunate reality, that you have to stay ahead of what feels like the inevitable. And you shouldn't have to, right? You shouldn't have to be that proactive. Not to the point of extra patrols, going overtime. But when you live in a state that has created this environment of lawlessness, that's exactly what happens. Now, the funny thing is, this is more about perception than it is about the reality on the ground. For example, yeah, Starbucks last month, they said, yeah, we're closing stores because of crime. In this case, that's not why DSW closed. They just said, look, we're struggling after the pandemic. this is a huge space. It's probably not bringing in as much revenue as we think it ought to. So we're just cutting ties. But the sense that it provides to some people is the crime, which means it's on their minds. It's on their minds. And perception is just as powerful as reality, just as important as addressing as reality. Meanwhile, in Tacoma, Desi Thomas, he had his trailer stolen. And because of the ongoing staffing issues over at the Tacoma Police Department, he decided, yeah, I've got no choice but to do the work the police officers would otherwise do. I have to do it myself. Over the course of 8 days, Desi saw his stolen trailer two times. The first time, he called 911. The response was very slow. He didn't get a sense of urgency coming from the Tacoma PD.
I got tired of waiting on them. As soon as he got in his van, I put my truck in reverse and went and T-boned him, basically.
That's how he got his car back. Tacoma police, according to Cairo 7 TV, confirm that on July 29th, Desi Thomas called 911 to report he'd located his trailer. Officers were dispatched. They didn't get there for an hour and 45 minutes after he called. It took them an hour and 45 minutes. When we tell you that the Tacoma PD is backlogged and they're always behind, this is what we mean.
I didn't expect to see it again after that. I was like, what are the odds? Perfect. You know, now we're going to really get him this time. You can't fumble this. And I'll gift wrap it to you again.
Except they fumbled that too. According to the Tacoma police, courtesy of Cairo 7 TV, officers got there 2 hours later. But by the time they had arrived, Desi was all like, I am done. I am done. I can't wait any longer. I can't risk our trailer getting leaving again. Maybe we won't find it a third time. We were lucky to find it a second time.
Just let me know you're not coming. Let me know it's not a priority. I'm not sitting here waiting. You know, putting myself in danger, sitting here waiting for you guys to show up.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not a priority. That's not the fault of the Tacoma Police Department. They are not to blame. The officers are not to blame for this. Poor leadership is to blame. Democrats and activists who pursued the defund movement, who chanted ACAB, they are to blame. You've got 44 open positions in the Tacoma Police Department. 44. 27 more cops are getting ready to leave imminently. This is insane, what's going on. And I apologize. It's 27 more officers getting ready to start, but they're not patrolling the streets right now. But we do know that because of retirements, we do know because of just officers speaking pretty openly with each other, saying, yeah, I'm leaving. I'm out. We're gone. We don't want to police here anymore. We're not allowed to be police officers in Washington State. We've got a loud activist community in Tacoma that's sounding a lot like those in Seattle. And until that issue is fixed, addressed, meaningfully addressed, until you fill those 44 positions for patrol officers, this situation is not going to get any better. And the problem here, Desi got lucky. Desi got lucky that nothing bad happened. At some point, this is going to end badly, either for the victim or the criminal. You have no idea who stole your car. You have no idea if they're armed. And if you get involved in an accident like they did here, not only could you get hurt, you can get arrested. You can even possibly get sued. This is not always going to end well. We are one tragedy away from learning that harsh reality. But the fact that people feel like they have to take matters into their own hands tells you how seriously screwed up our system is. And how desperate people are. And it's not fair to live like this. It's not fair to call 911 to report something that is important to you and your family, a stolen piece of property that's very valuable that you might rely on. It is not fair to live in a city where you call 911 and you know that they're not going to show up for at least an hour and 45 minutes. Now, they're prioritizing other things. I get that. But this seems to be something that should also be prioritized, and they are not staffed to do it. And no one yet has stepped up to take responsibility and vow to to fix this. They'll say they'll fix it, but not actually come up with a plan to fix it. That's truly what it means to vow to fix something. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Really do appreciate you tuning in today. If you missed any of my appearances on Newsmax earlier, please check them out over at our social media channels. You can just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere that I am. You will get on that text back. Last week, we told you about a move by Governor Ron DeSantis. I think it was on Thursday night, where the governor suspended the Florida prosecutor, Andrew Warren. He was suspended because he was not enforcing the law. He decided to enact some kind of veto power over laws that were passed. It's disgusting. It was an abuse of power. And it had to be done. And I'm glad it was done. I'm glad it was done. So he ends up getting suspended, and we knew that Andrew Warren would speak. He sent out some tweet about how this is illegal or overreach, blah, 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 blah. He was on MSNBC today. And of course, he has the audacity to call out DeSantis for abuse of power, despite the fact that he was the one who was abusing power. This is gaslighting at its most transparent.
Well, it's just a blatant abuse of power. And he's abusing his power to further his own political ambitions because he has this obsession with running for president or out-trumping Trump or both. But he's abusing his power in a way to violate the most fundamental, sacred aspect of our democracy. The fact that people's vote matters, that the people get to elect their elected officials. I mean, even my 8-year-old understands that. That's how democracy works. So what DeSantis is doing here is undermining the fabric and the framework of our democracy.
Okay, hero. No, he's not. You're a disgrace. You shouldn't be in a position of power over anyone. You shouldn't be making decisions that you just can't intellectually understand. He doesn't like the laws on the books. He is the one who is making choices not to prosecute, much like George Gascon, much like Dan Satterberg, although lately things have changed a little bit. That's who he is, a partisan who makes decisions not for what's in the interest of our community, of society, not what's best to show justice for victims. He does it based on his personal political beliefs. That's what he does. And as a result, he ended up finally paying a political price. I understand that he can go on MSNBC and present himself as a hero. I expect that. But he's not going to rewrite any of this. And he's not going to pretend to be a victim when he's the one who's victimized people by his lack of interest in pursuing his job. And as DeSantis said last week, this is a guy who decided to effectively assert veto power that he doesn't actually have over laws that he simply doesn't like. That power rests with the governor, not with a prosecutor, period.
Well, it's not personal. I mean, and this is about many more people than me. This isn't about one elected official being suspended. This is about the overthrow of democracy in Hillsborough County and in Florida. I mean, let's look at what he did. He's waging a war on free speech. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican or neither. Everybody should be outraged. And everybody should be worried, too. Think about the groups that DeSantis has already attacked for speaking out against him. First, it was businesses, then teachers, now public servants. Who's next? I mean, the governor likes to brag about the so-called free state of Florida, but it sure doesn't feel very free to a lot of us.
Well, then you're an idiot. Let's be clear. In the same breath, he's talking about how it's anti-speech to, I guess, call people out. I don't understand. He's saying it's anti-speech, anti-First Amendment. That's how Governor DeSantis is acting. And yet he also says that it's inappropriate for the governor to call out certain groups because he disagrees with them politically. Should he not be allowed to do that? Because isn't that part of the First Amendment? Isn't that? Now, Warren ended up putting out a video. We're not going to play it for you. It's a campaign style video. And I have no doubt, by the way, that this guy is going to run for higher office. I guarantee you that that's going to happen. But this is a guy who proudly proclaims that he's not going to pursue certain criminal cases involving abortion, involving transgender minors. That's how they phrase it. But what he's basically saying is, despite a law on the books that would prevent body-altering surgeries on minors, he's not going to get involved. Now, none of those cases have materialized yet. Obviously, on the abortion side, those laws just went into effect, and we haven't seen any of this. But he's basically coming out and saying, yeah, I disagree with them, so I'm not going to enforce those laws. You don't get to decide that. You do not get to decide that. That is the role of lawmakers. You are not a lawmaker. And how many times have we had instances of not just prosecutors, but judges deciding we're going to enforce laws we want. We're going to ignore the ones we don't. We are going to judge whatever it is we end up doing on an individual case through the lens of our political beliefs. It's wrong. It's wrong when conservatives do it. It's wrong when Democrats do it, period. And of course, he frames himself as the hero. MSNBC willingly accepts that framing because they view him as a hero. Ron DeSantis is evil. Ron DeSantis is the potential future of the Republican Party, so they must deem him to be evil, abusive. It's despicable what it is they're doing. It's absolutely despicable. And I am glad that Ron DeSantis is in power. I am glad that Ron DeSantis did this to Andrew Warren. And I'm glad that Andrew Warren, at least for now, won't get to further abuse the community that he's supposed to stand up for. How many instances of crime have we had to deal with from prolific offenders because of people like Warren? People like George Gascon or Kim Fox or Larry Krasner. How many times have we seen over and over and over again the same bad guys committing acts of violence? Getting off of what? A few weeks in jail for some serious crimes, abusing women, beating them up, throwing women down flights of stairs. Yeah, the party of women are the ones who are responsible for these light sentences. The party of women. They can't even define that term anymore. So good riddance to this guy. Good riddance. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. I would love to hear from you. You text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my latest blog. The guy who took the video as he unloaded on the Seattle parking enforcement officer for ticketing taxpayers, but doing literally nothing when it comes to the illegally parked RVs and broken down cars from homeless people, that guy's going to be on the show coming up in the next hour. The Jason Rant Show.